You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
With Mark Delder this morning from Newsroom. Morena, Mark, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, thank you. It's great to chat today. We're diving back into the world of party politics this morning. I want to start by talking about donations, because that's been a big headline topic this week. A lot of discussion about whether we need some more regulation in the way donations are done to political parties in Aotearoa. Also, some data has come out as well showing that the National Party, I think since 2021, has had 7.5 times more donations than Labour, which is obviously just two of the big parties compared to each other. But what, do you have any thoughts on this? What's your take on how political donations happen in New Zealand?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's clear that there is a lot of money that goes into politics. You know, there are tighter restrictions than in my home country of the United States, so that's a good thing. But I think people, you know, it's understandable to look at the amount of money, and particularly for large donations, anything over $20,000 has to be declared very quickly to the Electoral Commission and published quite quickly. But you do start to go, even for people who have quite a lot of money, how much are they giving, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars out of just pure goodwill? Do people expect a return, or what's the sort of situation there?
I don't actually know this. Do you have to declare who's giving that money? Is it public information? Is that something that people can look up and see who's donated 20K to whatever party?
Yeah, for any donation over 20,000, the donor is disclosed, including their address, which is maybe a bit further than we necessarily need to go, but names is helpful.
Yeah.
And actually on Newsroom, we've got a page tracking polls and donations this year, and it sort of has an updating table each hour, actually, of each donation that comes in that's reported over $20,000. So we've got the name, the party, that sort of thing.
Mm.
And it is interesting seeing, you know, particularly when people are giving to multiple parties, that's when you start to go, okay, probably there aren't so many people who have political beliefs that are so wide-ranging that they support Labour and National and this party and that party, but they are giving that money.
It's really interesting. What is your perspective on how we should be shifting the system? Because there is a lot of various ways people think we could be tweaking it. Do you have a strong opinion on that?
Yeah, I think I wouldn't say I have a strong opinion on what the right way is, but I think it's worth having conversations about it. The Independent Electoral Review, which came out in June, recommended some pretty big changes to a lot of things, but donations was one of them, where they said actually donations would be capped at $30,000, which is a lot of money still, but you know, much smaller than the sorts of donations we're seeing this year in the hundreds of thousands. And only registered voters could donate, so you wouldn't get foreign nationals able to donate, and companies and unions wouldn't be able to either. And the threshold for publishing the name of donors would be shifted to just down to $1,000. So it's quite a low threshold. Basically, the idea being if you're doing more than just giving a couple hundred bucks to the party you like, the public deserves to know that you're doing that. And I don't know about the specifics of that proposal, but it seems to me, you know, something in line with that. Certainly a cap on donations would make sense. It would help, you know, ensure that people do have trust in the system working the way it should.
Mm, absolutely. Well, let's have a look at what the parties have been up to since we last spoke, Mark. There's been some interesting policy released from all the major parties, really, at this point. We've seen quite a lot of, I guess, ideological policy that's been put out, particularly by some of those larger minor parties. New Zealand First and ACT have had some pretty vitriolic policy come out, actually, in the last couple of weeks. But we have also seen things like Labour saying they'd remove GST from fruit and vegetables, Nationals talking a lot about getting into the classroom. The phones has been a really big sort of headline topic, I guess. With all of these different things that have been coming out of the mix, what is it starting to say about the vibe, I guess, for want of a better word, of what we're going to see as we get closer and closer to October?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because I think the you know, cost of living is the concern that most people have. The One News poll earlier this week, I think, had close to one in every two voters saying that's my number one thing I am worried about. And actually, it doesn't seem to me that we've had so many policies focused on that other than, like you say, the GST one from Labour. And accompanying that GST announcement was actually changes to Working for Families, which are more technical and less exciting and harder to capture in a headline, but actually would make a much bigger difference to the average family budget than the GST one, which only saves people around $5 a week, which, you know, for some people that could be helpful, but it's not really going to be the difference between paying your bills and not, versus the extra $20 to $40 people might get out of the Working for Families changes each week. That's a much bigger deal. But, you know, besides that, there's been, like you say, stuff around education. Labour also has a policy on teaching financial literacy in schools. There's stuff on cracking down on vaping. ACT has a policy to increase the prison population through increasing criminal sentences. You know, Law and Order, to be fair, was the second biggest issue for voters, but it's been interesting that the economy and cost of living hasn't featured as much as you might have expected in the past 2 weeks, and there's a question, I guess, as to what degree parties are going to be ramping up that campaigning on that issue in particular in the less than 2 months to the election.
I know, it's really kind of racing upon us now, particularly when we look at Labour. How do you see Chris Hipkins' Labour Party handling this election? What seems to be their tactic for how they're presenting themselves?
Yeah, I think they're still trying to figure out their tactic. They'll have been disappointed with the One News poll because it basically captured the period of that GST announcement and then subsequent announcements on paid parental leave, expanding the ability or creating the ability for the sort of non-primary partner to get a couple, 4 weeks of paid leave. The poll still showed them dropping from where the last poll had been. To be fair, the last poll was taken before, I believe, the Kitty Allen situation had played out. And so there's a question as to maybe whether they dropped lower than where this poll showed them at 29 and then rose back up because of their announcements. But either way, it's a bit of a disappointment. They basically announced 7 policies in 7 days last week, and that might have been too much for voters to actually keep up with. But they are now sort of aware that they're kind of in a fight for their lives. Chris Hipkins was saying on Tuesday morning that he, that Labour was the underdog, and that he's going to be running maybe a bit more of a negative campaign, or as he says, puts it, you know, putting scrutiny on the opposition's policies, talking more about what a National ACT government would look like, and basically trying to say, look, maybe we're not inspiring you in the way that Jacinda might have in 2020, but that's not a good enough reason to go vote for the other guys when you have a look at what they want to do.
It's been a very interesting way that parties have framed what they're up to this year, and it does feel distinctly different from 2020, as you just mentioned there, from across the board, not just from Labour's approach. But I am really interested, do you think this is going to be quite an ugly campaign? We're already seeing some pretty intense, I guess, headlines head up on people's hoardings around the cities. But, you know, do you have a sense of this might get a little bit scrappy this year?
Yeah, I think there's a couple sort of there's two ways in which it could, right? One is on the politician level, the things the politicians are saying about each other. And I don't think that will deviate too much from the norm. I mean, yesterday we saw Chris Hipkins going after ACT for having a couple of these anti-vax candidates in their list, who've mostly had stepped down since those comments have been found. And you know, you could say that's nasty or not, but it seems broadly within the range of what you might expect in the political discourse, given the situation. On the other hand, then you've got these, you know, very fringe parties and these conspiracy theory activists who will be, trying to make their presence felt on the campaign trail, tagging along to the major parties and disrupting their events and that sort of thing. And I can see that being much more heated, much more vitriolic, and adding sort of a negative and nasty element to the campaign, even if the politicians manage to keep it more above board than you might expect.
Oh, God, maybe we should all just wake up on the 15th of October at this point and get it all done.
If that's an option, I will take it.
Me too. Hey, thank you so much, Mark. It's great to speak with you this morning. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks. Take care.
Thanks so much for having me.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.